Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2018, and I'm now here with Mark Collett. Mark, for anyone who doesn't know about you and your channel, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, everyone. Well, hopefully most people who are here tonight and most people who subscribe to you will already know about my channel. But if you don't, you should check it out. I'm sure there'll be a link in the description below. I produce a weekly podcast and do a weekly show called This Week on the Alt-Right. If you haven't checked out my channel, please do, because there's a wealth of good content there. And the latest video is on the fake news about the Syrian boy being waterboarded. Because, shock, it's not waterboarding to pour 500 milliliters of water over the back of someone's head. That is not waterboarding. And I say that, but
it's so absurd that they were using that term. It's so ridiculous. And you've shared several things on social media about similar stories where a child of color did similar things to a white kid, and no one gives a shit. No one cares at all about this. It's I mean, what happened to the Syrian boy was really nothing. When I finally saw the clip, I thought, is this what they're making a big fuss about? I don't think it's nice or good or right, but it's nothing. It's a tiny thing.
Well, it's so small, it's just playground nonsense. I mean, when I was at school, you know, people would have water thrown at them, they'd be dragged around the playground, people would end up having scuffles. I remember once going home and having to explain to my mum why the sleeve on my jacket was hanging off, because I'd ended up in a fight with somebody and they'd jumped on me and grabbed the sleeve and pulled it. And as I went to get away, the sleeve had sort of detached from the jacket. And that was quite a difficult conversation to have with your mum. But it didn't result in police action. It didn't result in anyone getting...
How much compensation? Was there a GoFundMe?
Well, there wasn't £158,000 for my mum to sew the sleeve back on. I mean, I wish there was. I mean, that would have been a right money spinner. And let's face it, losing the sleeve off your jacket is far worse than having a little bit of water poured on your head. I mean, what happened to him? I mean, he got slightly moist and got a grass stain on his shirt. It's not really the end of the world, is it?
No, it's really nothing. And I don't know. I think it was there was a rumor that he had been bullying that the Syrian kid had been bullying some girl at the school. I think that was later debunked in some way. But either way, what happened was simply not serious. And to see the hysteria, it's led to £150,000 being donated. That is it's just unbelievable. But the hysteria was completely out of proportion and totally artificial and manufactured. I remember seeing a comedian, David Schneider, encouraging this, sort of promoting this, pushing people to feel really guilty and saying, but who radicalized this boy, the bully? And he had photos of Nigel Farage.
Well, it's really funny, because it's not funny, it's actually sad, because when you compare it to, if people watch my video, I don't just say that the whole story is nonsense, I compare it to two other stories. One of a young boy called Matthew Hayden, who was 17, who got beaten by a gang of immigrant descent. They beat him with a golf club, left him with a fractured skull and a bleed on the brain. And he will probably never play rugby again. He was a talented young rugby player. In fact, he had a scholarship to an American university. Because of his rugby talents, he had to pass that up. And also, I covered the case of a young girl, Willow Ivy Doherty, who's just 17 months old, who was absolutely brutalized by two young Somalian boys. They bit her 15 times and strangled her until she was blue, and she's scarred for life. She needs skin grafts, she needs plastic surgery to put right the damage those boys did. But the media, the press, the fake news, the Lugan presser, they didn't give a penny to these victims. In fact, they made sure that their genuinely harrowing stories disappeared down the memory hole. And this is how you know these people are fake news, because when somebody gets water poured over them in the playground, it's front page news for days, for weeks. I mean, it's still rumbling on. But when it's a white person that is the victim of a genuinely horrific and life-changing attack, it gets reported on, major facts get omitted, the story goes down the memory hole, and not a penny is raised in compensation for the victim.
Yeah, it's totally it's just ludicrous. But this kind of thing is increasingly typical. And of course, the whole point of it is, why was that pushed? It's pushed so as to make white people feel guilty, to feel insecure about themselves and their own people, their own group, and just to make them more malleable, more pliable, more amenable to further mass immigration. It's all a psychological, it's just to weaken them psychologically. Now that's I mean, this suffering that this Syrian boy supposedly endured, the whole point of publicizing it is simply, the media don't actually give a shit about his suffering, minuscule as it was. The whole point of publicizing it is simply to weaken white people. That's all that this is about. And it's worked. I mean, all of these idiots who've donated, well, the donation is a token of their capitulation to their own replacement. Do you want to say anything about that, Mark?
No, I agree. Sorry, you just went a bit robot on me then. But yeah, I mean, somebody tried to blame me on Twitter for it. They said that it was actually all my fault, that in fact, it was people like me who led to this. And how do I feel about it? How do I, in fact, sleep at night? I mean, how do I sleep at night knowing that a young boy had 500 milliliters of water poured on his head? I don't know. I tell you, I sleep pretty soundly.
All right. So what would you like to say about, you were on Millennial last year, 2017. What would you like to say about how things have progressed and evolved since then, the events of 2018? Just a sort of, we'll talk about that for about 10 minutes or so.
I've really enjoyed 2018. 2018 has been great. I mean, when I came on Millennial last year, I think I had about 12,000 YouTube subs. Obviously now I'm up to about 62,000, so I've had a good year. But more importantly than my own growth, because I've seen great growth across social media. Obviously my book has been doing relatively well. And if anyone's listening that wants to read it, you can download it for free. It's not trapped behind a paywall or anything. So they're all really good things for me personally. And I think the alt-right in 2018 has done very, very well. We've made many, many more links. I've worked with many, many people. We've seen the rise of lots of new, exciting YouTubers. People like JF Garapay, whose channel's just exploded. We've seen the return of people like David Duke, who this year, he has really, really blazed a trail across YouTube. I think more and more people are waking up to ideas of race realism, ideas of who runs the media. And I think we've seen a huge red pilling of our people. And to end the year on the high that we're seeing now with what's gone on in France is absolutely wonderful. But the highlight of my year of 2018 wasn't my own personal growth. It wasn't really any of the things I've discussed yet. It was actually the in real life meeting that you and I had when we took a group of young nationalists camping in the Derbyshire Dales. We did an amazing 10-mile hike. And I think this whole push that we've been leading to get people doing things in the real world, for me, that's been a major, major boost for my morale, because people have been saying for a really long time, you guys need to do something, you need to get people active, you need to get people out there. And seeing young people like we saw out in the beautiful English countryside, making friends, doing great physical activity, but most of all, making something of themselves. That, to me, has been a real morale booster.
Yeah, just so that people know, I've switched my camera off because I think my connection isn't very good. So my apologies about that. I think that the IRL stuff is very, very important. And I think in the last 2 or 3 months, as I was saying in a previous hangout, I think in the last 2 or 3 months, people have become much more conscious of the need to do this, to meet in real life, because obviously the online platforms are not stable, they're not reliable for us. And so that's become a huge concern for people, actually getting to know each other in real life. But I think also that the groundwork has been, this has been... beginning throughout this year that the groundwork has been laid for this, or at least some of it. I think there's a lot more to be done, but it's certainly started. And would you like to talk about how you've the hiking trips and so on, one of which I went on in August, but that wasn't the only one that you've done. So this is a sort of semi-regular, like how often do you organize these?
Well, we do a couple of events. Well, we did three events last year, actually. We did one, which was obviously the hiking trip, which involved camping. And we also did two lunacy runs, which are 10K hardcore assault courses, which are actually races. And we took people along to those. We used one of them as a platform to raise money for white South Africans, which was greatly successful. We offered to raise £1,000 and we did so in a matter of days. I mean, it was literally less than 48 hours when we raised that money. But I want to just expand this, and I want your help in expanding this. And I would also like to offer my help to you to help you get fit. I mean, I watched some of your videos recently, the videos which were very heartfelt, and you talked about things you'd missed out on in life. And I know plenty of people who are in your position who feel a similar way. And I think there's a lot of young people today, many young people, in fact. And when I say young, I don't mean just in their teens or their early 20s, but up to their 30s, who really have felt very isolated in life, very cut off because of the horrible nature of what has been done to Europe, what has been done to our people. And people feel isolated. They feel like lost individuals. And I would like to get so many people together, give people some real hope, help people get fit, help people get confident, help people improve themselves physically and mentally, help people make friends, help people come out of their shells. Because I want to see the nationalist youth of today and tomorrow, many of whom feel very lost, I want to help them find themselves. I want to help these young people achieve everything they can. And I want to make sure that the next generation of nationalists aren't lost, that they are found, and that they are very stable, successful, outgoing people who achieve everything that they hope to achieve. And they really become great spokespeople for our cause. Because I think if we strive for excellence, I think if we go out there and improve ourselves physically and mentally and spiritually as well, we will then become beacons for the general public. We will become people that the general public flock to, and that will help us sell our ideals and our sort of vision to those people far more than we could ever do if we weren't achieving our maximum potential.
Absolutely. I'm not sure if my internet connection is dreadful or not. Can people tell me whether they can hear me clearly? Because I'm hearing Mark get very robotic. But if so, I do apologize. There's not much I can do. I've got a fiber optic connection, so you'd think that would be reliable. But anyway, I think that, as you say, the getting fit and so on is obviously very important. It's something that I've never, apart from when I was 18, I went through a brief phase of swimming every day or every second day. So that was obviously a novelty for me, but it's something I want to get back into. And throughout this year, there have been various changes in my life that we don't need to go into in this one, but certainly the videos that you referred to from 6 weeks ago, they were filmed on, I think, the 12th of October, so it was like 2 months, and then I waited a few weeks before putting them up. That was a sort of crisis brought about by various factors. But indeed, one of them was the lingering effects of having been isolated for so long. And I think in that sense, I'm a sort of prototype for the neets of today, the guys in their late teens, especially in their 20s, because this is something that spans, throughout your 20s and into your 30s nowadays. I mean, there are plenty of guys who are still living at home. And I mean, this is something that we have to come to grips with. It's no longer. Oh no! Is the audio is really bad? Is it? Let me know.
I've got you loud and clear now, mate. I've got you loud and clear.
Oh, good. This is no longer something that's confined to men in their early 20s, like right after they've graduated. It's now guys in their 30s who are still isolated. Now, whether I don't know. I think there's always hope. I think there's always a way to regenerate. Recovery is always possible. But of course, as you get older, the more time passes, the less complete that recovery will be. It doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. Of course you should do it. But you know, the sooner you do it, the better, basically. So you will always lose more the longer you wait to do this. That's something that I think is extremely important to grasp, but because you know, you don't want to waste time. But also it's important to grasp that even if you have wasted time, get better anyway, because it is better than you know, being lost forever. So yeah, there are guys in their 20s and 30s now who are in this position, and I think I sort of came before them for my own reasons, but I think now it is increasingly common, and it's very tragic. But it's something that we have to address if we can. I mean, the political stuff is another matter. I think that the first step is to take care of ourselves, to take care of each other, and you know, rehabilitate ourselves.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, that is exactly what I'm saying. We need to look after each other. We need to help each other. We need to build a brotherhood. And not just for men either. It'll be, you know, a big family is what we're going to build. People who can come together and will assist each other in getting fit. This should be the biggest white pill for all of your listeners. And I want to tell everyone that you can't change the past. You can't change the past. What has been written has been written. And you can't go back and erase it. But you have got the pen in your hand. And every blank page in the book in front of you, it's up to you what you write in your book. It's up to you what goes on those pages. So whilst you can't change the past, you can learn from it. And you can make sure that when you learn from it, you move forward and you make a better future. And that's what I hope we'll be able to do in 2019, help a lot of young people with a better future. And I'd like to help you as well. I know after listening to your videos that, you know, you like to get fit, and we've spoken about this before. And you know, you're always welcome to come and stay with me. You're always welcome up here in Leeds. And I would love to train you. I'd love to help you beat the cigarettes. I'd love to help you get fit, and I'd love to help you achieve all your goals. It would be fantastic to see you improve your fitness and really, really push your boundaries in 2019. And I know when we had a chat, you said you'd never, ever hit another man in the face. So I would like to be the first person that you have ever hit. I would like Colin Robertson to do a bit of boxing training, a bit of sparring with me. I think we'd have a lot of fun. And I would love to see you come out of your shell, because I think you're one of the most important spokesmen on the alt-right. I think so many people look up to you, and so many people rightfully see what you've done with your life. And you seem to speak for so many people. You seem to effectively speak for this lost generation. And people look at you and say, wow, I'm in the same position. But I would like to see millennial woes, you know, get out of the dressing gown and really push his boundaries. And I'd like to be there with you, mate, because when we walked up the hill, when we did that hike together, I really enjoy your company. And I think you are such a beacon for young people. I think if those young people saw you overcoming what you've been through and finally making that character arc and achieving all your goals, I think you could be one of the most important inspirations for all young people out there. And I think that's what we need. Young people need a hero. And I know there's people out there like Squatting Slav and the Golden One, but it's different for them because they're people that just always seem to have had it. And that doesn't make for the best story. And that's not to knock them. They're amazing guys, but that doesn't make for the best story. What makes for the best story is an amazing character arc. I mean, when you saw Star Wars and you saw Luke Skywalker go from being the humble farmer to being the guy who basically brought down the empire, you know, that is an amazing character arc, and it makes it inspirational. And you know what? I think you've got that character arc in you too, because so many people love you. So many people are here tonight to listen to you. So many people support you. And I'd love to see you take things to the next level. And if you want to do that, you know, I will help you every step of the way, my friend.
Well, thank you very much. I'm just looking in the live chat, and people are very scared about the prospect of me losing the dressing gown. But, you know, I obviously can't work out while wearing the dressing gown, but it would only be temporary. I would put it back on for the videos, so don't worry about that. or at least some of the videos. I mean, I don't wear it all the time. Not surgically attached to it. Anyway, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, after the hiking trip in August, that, for me, that was a huge embarrassment because, and I felt very bad about it. I just wasn't, I mean, we don't need to go into the embarrassing details now, but I mean, clearly I wasn't fit and I didn't, what wasn't up to the standard that everyone else there was at. And so that was, it certainly brought it home to me. Things are not as they should be. And then again, later on at the end of September with the Twitter thing. So yeah, there clearly are changes that need to be made. I talked about this in my own videos. We don't need to go over it again. But yeah, that is something that I want to do. Now, ever since then, that has been a sort of assumption in me. Okay, changes are coming. That's fine. But there were things I had to do in the meantime. First, the Erkenbrand conference and then Berlin, which I haven't uploaded that speech yet. And then, of course, Millennial, which was a massive logistical undertaking. And I thought in the meantime, it would just be insane for me to attempt a huge lifestyle change in the midst of all this work, because I just know I would fail. So I didn't want to do it. But certainly in January and February and March next year, I want to start exercising and stuff like that. Because I think it's just necessary. I can't go on like this. And I think that, well, I hope that a lot of young guys who are watching have the same feelings. Now, hopefully, I will make videos about this change, and I hope that those videos are inspirational. In a way, I think it would be a dreadful waste if I did this and didn't document it. I think it should be something that other people can watch. Now, what I'll probably do is make very concise, like 3-minute video, maybe a 3-minute video each day or whenever there's something significant to record. And that will be a sort of diary of getting better in various ways. And hopefully that will then become a sort of compendium, documenting the change from one thing to another. And I hope that that inspires other people to undertake similar changes in their lives.
Oh, I think it would. I think it would inspire people. And you know, when you said earlier, you said you don't want to go into the embarrassment of the hiking. There's no shame. There's no shame in not achieving what you want the first time you try something. You know, sometimes it takes a long time to get where you're going. I mean, I'll embarrass myself now. I mean, the first time I ever went mountain biking, a guy took me up to Dolby Forest and he was like, oh, there's this sort of 20 odd mile course. It's a red route. It's hardcore. And I was like, mate, I've got this. I have got this. And about 10 miles into this 20 odd mile course, I had been riding the bike pretty much the wrong way. And I had essentially been sitting on the seat as I'd been doing the bumpy downhill bits. And it got to the point where I could no longer sit down because I was in that much pain, which meant I had to ride the next 10 miles or so stood up. And by the time I'd finished that red route, by the time I'd done that 20 odd mile course, I was in so much pain, I could barely walk because I'd been stood up on the bike for 10 miles. I certainly couldn't sit down because I'd been sat down on the bike when I shouldn't have been for the first 10 miles. So in the end, I was in actual agony and I was in quite a lot of pain for the next few days. And I look back on that and I actually think to myself, wow, that was one of the worst days I've ever had. It was just incredibly painful. But I did it. And now I go and do that course and I know what I'm doing and I've got a better bike and I've got the right shorts so I don't get pounded into oblivion by the hard seat. But I enjoy it now. And it's that growth, it's those personal journeys that at one time you'll look on them and you might hate it in the moment. And in the short term, you might look back on it with a degree of embarrassment. But in the long term, you look back on it with a smile on your face because it's what makes you who you are. And it also gives you a story to tell. And you can go then to other people who want to undertake the same things you did and give other people the right advice. So when somebody says to me, they're going to do a 20-mile mountain biking course, I say, mate, get a pair of those cycling shorts and make sure you've got rear suspension on your bike. You're going to be in a lot of pain. It's good to be able to give that advice. And I think you will come at things from a very, very unique point. And you will be able to give advice which has a real deep meaning to it. And that deep meaning will touch people right in their heart, in their soul. And I think that will make you, as I said, such a figurehead for this movement. Because I do see an awful lot of very, very disillusioned, very, very isolated young people. I get a lot of people writing to me saying, you know, what should they do? What can I do to help them? Well, with your help and with your transformation, I would like you and I to hold an even bigger camp next year, an even bigger and better camp. Don't just cap it at 12 like we did. Try and get the numbers right up, you know, make the barbecue even bigger, you know, get everyone there and get a real good feeling going. Because I mean, we need
that community. Funny. It's funny, you know. Yeah, it's funny, you know, because the day I want to say first, because you were saying about the saddle, with that day, the hiking, I could have gone on a bit longer. I mean, for those who don't know, I sort of bailed out about halfway through. I could have gone on a bit longer, but I didn't have the right boots, and they were eating my ankles. My ankles were like a mess. There was all the skin was all torn up and all this for a few like a week afterwards. But so I could have gone on a bit longer, but I didn't have the right equipment. So clearly, that kind of thing is essential. Now, as for the day. Even though I felt self-conscious and that I'd, you know, fucked up and let everyone down, even so, when I think of it now, I do have very fond memories because it was that time of year. It was August. It was the end of summer. It was the start of autumn. And the weather, and also it was that, I have to say, it was the first time I'd been in the British countryside again since I left Britain, since I was doxed. And so there was tremendous... Well, it was emotionally very interesting for me to be there that day, and that was why a lot of the time I just wanted to look at the landscape because it was just amazing to be back in Britain and to see the countryside again, to see the landscape again. That was another part of it. But anyway, I do remember very fondly the feeling of it's just friendship and camaraderie. It was great. It was a really great thing. I mean, and I'm not just saying this to encourage other people to take it up, to go on these things. It's really the truth. So I would suggest that people do that. What was the other thing? Yeah, how can people get involved? Because there are people in the live chat saying that they would like to join in on this next year. So how can people do that? How can they get in touch?
Well, the first thing we'll do next year, there will be another Lunacy Run in May. People are welcome to come to that. And after that, we will open up sort of a couple of different events over summer. We're going to have one which is going to be hiking, again, in the English countryside, and one which is going to be a more private affair where we're going to have a personal trainer, we're going to have a massive bonfire, and that's going to be a separate affair. And we're going to try and do something sort of several times, and then again we'll close the year off with the final Lunacy Run of the year. So we're hoping to do a good four events, maybe more, and we will start announcing them at the beginning of next year to give everyone plenty of time to come along. And even if you don't think you're going to do wonderfully, even at something like Lunacy Run where it is actually a race, it's not important that you win. It's not important that you do amazingly. You know, there are people that come along, hen parties that come along, and they do it, you know, for a laugh. You have people doing it for charity. The guy who actually won the last Lunacy Run, well, there was a young guy who came along and beat me from our nationalist group, which was great. It's great to see young nationalists coming up and teaching the old dogs like me, you know, a new trick or two. And it was also really interesting to see that the guy who won that race was actually in his late 40s or early 50s, and he was an athlete who's been competing all his life. Yeah, he's an athlete, he's been competing all his life, and he's still going now, you know, white guy, you know, and this is what's in us. I mean, sometimes we as people, we look at ourselves and we kind of despair. We kind of see everything that's wrong. It's easy to become black-pilled, isn't it? It's easy to see the things that are wrong or the things that we haven't achieved or things we haven't done. But what we sometimes forget is that greatness is in us. It's in our DNA. It's in our blood. It runs through our veins. And that guy who achieved that amazing feat, we all share the same DNA as him. We all share that inbuilt greatness. And if you push for something, if you want it hard enough, if you really set your sights on achieving something great, you can do. And we've all got that in us. But sometimes we lose faith. And we lose faith because we've had our communities shattered, because we feel isolated, because we've had white guilt foisted upon us, because we've been told that, you know, men should be women and women should be men, and we're all mixed up. But once you straighten out your thinking, and once you set yourself a powerful, singular goal, and you strive for something more, the sky's the limit. I mean, we come from a race of people that didn't just look at the stars. We sent men to the stars. You know, there is no limit for us. And if we hadn't been shackled by the nonsense that we have, the guilt, the political correctness, the, you know, affirmative action that's held back our people, where could we be now? Well, we could be far further forward than we are. And that's why we fight. That's what we're doing this for, so that we can achieve our destiny, so we can take our people to a new heady height. But remember, that starts with you. It doesn't start with the people you see on YouTube. It starts in your living room. It starts in front of your computer. And most importantly, it starts tonight if you want it to. Don't be one of these jerks that talks about what they're going to do on New Year's Day because it's a New Year's resolution, or talks about what they're going to do at the end of January, or when the clocks go, when the clocks change and it all gets a little warmer. Don't talk about doing something. Just do it. Just get up and make a positive change. Get rid of the negatives in your life and really push for something more. And with every day of doing that, it gets easier to be positive. It gets easier to achieve. And you will find that just in a few short weeks or months, you will have come so far. And you might not even recognize who you see in the mirror, because the changes will be that great and you will have become something that much more magnificent.
Absolutely. When did you start this kind of thing? Because have you always been into health and fitness or an exercise, or was it something that you adopted later on?
Well, I've always done stuff like that. When I was at school, I quite liked cross country. I was quite good at tennis. But for many years, my fitness was maintained by leafleting. I mean, when the BMP was at its height, we used to go out 3 times a week. We would go out Tuesdays, Thursdays, and we'd have a massive leafleting session on Sundays. And at election times, we'd be out every single night. And what people tend to forget when it comes to fitness is walking is great exercise, and you only have to do small things to improve. And I would say that years and years of leafleting served me well. But then I really got into running, because running's something that's quite cheap, it's quite easily accessible. Once you've got a pair of shoes, shorts and a t-shirt, anyone can get involved. But what made a huge change for me is I'd been an on and off member of gyms for quite some time, but now there are large chains like Pure Gym and others that are similar. And these huge chains allow you membership of the gym 24/7 for about 16 quid a month. So for 16 quid a month, you can turn up whenever you want. You can go at 2 in the morning if you want. You can go as many times as the week. And there are free classes and free advice from the trainers in there. And I just threw myself into it. I threw myself into a bit of weight. And I remember somebody said to me, "Why don't you do a spinning class?" Well, I thought, isn't it just girls that do that? And I did a spinning class, and it was one of the toughest exercises I've ever done. Half an hour of intense spinning class absolutely floors even me. I'm covered in sweat. I feel like totally beat, but I feel like I've achieved something. So for a very, very small amount per month, for a small investment, you can get involved in something which will really help you out. And at these classes, at these gyms, you will meet people. I've been going to the same gym now for years, and I talk to people regularly there. I talk to some of the trainers. I go to the classes. You will make friends. And, you know, if you're a guy, it's a great place to meet a nice woman. And you tend to find that the women who go to the gym are usually people who care about something a lot more than just going out and getting drunk and having casual sex. You can actually meet nice, self-motivated, you know, decent women who are into fitness and into health. And that's what you want. So there's so many positives. And that's what really changed me when I saw that gym membership was getting cheap. I signed up and I've never, ever looked back. And I've been going to the gym now for about four or five years. And I've really, really loved it. And this is a call to everyone in the chat. If you haven't joined one of these gyms, join it. And if you're in Leeds, don't be a stranger. Give me a call. You can come and lift with me anytime. You know, we'll set a special Saturday aside and we can go to the gym and we can do some arms. We can do some chest. And afterwards, you know, we can go out and have a bite to eat. We should be getting together as groups and we should be doing things like this locally and reinforcing almost a kind of brotherhood across the country where we all encourage each other to push our limits and improve, not as individuals, but as a tight-knit community with a core set of goals and ideals, which is, of course, improving ourselves for the improvement of our people and to ensure a future for our people.
Well, indeed. And part of that is that the confidence. I think that physical exercise does increase your confidence. What would you say about that? With reference to, because you're saying about, you know, guys can meet girls at this kind of thing. And I think a part of that made me think of the fact that a lot of neats, a lot of guys who watch things on YouTube and are aware of how, you know, bad the world is and so on, are lacking it just seems to go, it seems to be something that is prevalent there in the community. I'm not saying that the reason that they're concerned about this, the state of the world, is that they aren't fit or whatever, but I think there is a certain overlap, and I think that a lot of it is I think that exercise would help them to you know, feel more confident about approaching women and so on. I mean, that does seem to be a sort of cliche. People have said it before.
I don't think it's a cliche, and I don't think it just is limited to women. I mean, obviously it helps with women, but it's about loving yourself. And I've said this before, but you can never expect the world to love you if you don't love
absolutely
yourself.
Yeah. I know.
And that applies to women. It applies to jobs. It applies to, you know, other people around you, your friends, your family. If you look at yourself in the mirror and you see something staring back that you're proud of, that you're invested in, that you think, yeah, I'm at my best, it gives you that buzz. It lets you hold your head up high, put your shoulders back. It gives you a bit of a strut. And people see that and people respect it. And that's the problem today. Many white people don't love themselves. We've been taught to hate ourselves. We've been taught to self-flagellate, to punish ourselves for these imagined ills that we allegedly committed in the past. And we've sunk into this malaise of computer games, of late nights, of sitting there watching a flickering box in the corner of the room, which only instills more white guilt. And this isn't me having a go at people, because believe me, I'm a normal guy. I enjoy computer games. I watch the odd movie. But the fact is, people have bought too much into that. People have got too invested in a fantasy world which isolates them. They've got invested in a world of Netflix and online gaming and all of these things, collecting little things. And I do enjoy those things, but they have to be something you do at the end of a successful day. They can't be something that you base your life around. And that's what our enemy has got us doing. Our enemy has got us basing our lives around trivialities. They've got us basing our lives around hobbies, when the hobby should be something we do in our downtime, something we do when we're not at the gym, when we're not succeeding in life, when we're not with the woman we love, when we're not with our friends and our community. But instead, all of that's been turned on our head. And of course, it's been turned on its head by design, by a group, by an insidious group of internationalists who want to break us apart and wants to see us isolated. Because when we're isolated, because all these people who talk about individualism, and I'm not going to mention their names, well, I might do, the liberalists, you know, they talk about the individual. They talk about that's all that matters to the West is the individual. No, it's not. No, it's not. Individuals may have had great schemes and plans and designs, but if it was not for a cohesive and tight-knit community, those schemes, plans, and designs would have never got off the drawing board, and they would have never manifested themselves in any meaningful way. It is the community. It was the Western world pulling together that allowed those things to become realities, those dreams to become realities. The Colosseum in Rome, that was the idea of a visionary or a group of visionaries, some of the best architects to ever live. But it was built by thousands and thousands of hands, by people who came together to build something, to do something better. And that is mirrored all over the Western world. And that is why we're not individuals. That is why the survival of the group is more important than the survival of the individual. Because once you put your survival, your personal survival, above that of the group perishes because everyone just scatters. Everyone scatters thinking of themselves, and they're all picked off one at a time easily. But when we all band together, when we all stick together, when we all come together and form a shield wall, that's when we're unbeatable. And that's why they're so desperate to atomize us. That's why they're so desperate to get us off these platforms, because they don't want me and millennial woes talking about these things. They don't want these red pills. They don't want people coming together in real life to be better people and form communities, because they want us as scared, lonely, isolated, atomized individuals trapped in our houses. And what scares them more than anything is that when we come together, you see what you're seeing in France. You see a revolution. And I want 2019 to be the year when we come together like we've never come together before. And let's turn this spark into a fire that rages across this land and reclaims it for our people, because we can do that. Our ancestors did it, and we are the heirs to their throne. And it's time we took it back.
Absolutely, of course. It really is. But you've said it, so I'm not going to repeat your words. One thing I would ask you, Mark, because I know that certain people will object to what you've just said about the individual and the collective, liberalist and so on. So I would ask you, what is the other side of it? What is the importance of the individual? What is an individual?
Well, the importance of the individual, of course, is that individuals do come up with great ideas, great plans, great designs. The individuals are protected, though, by the group. And those great individuals inspire the group. I mean, how many people in the chat tonight are inspired by great works of art, great works of music or poetry, great works of architecture? How many times do you walk around a European city and see a mighty cathedral and think, oh my God, that is so beautiful. That is what my ancestors did. And of course, it was very, very talented individuals who drew up those plans, who drew up those designs, who came up with those stunning, inspirational pieces of art. But the fact is, those individuals were part of a cohesive group. They were part of a community. And as I said, the two live hand in hand, and it is the group that grants the individual the right. It is the group that allows the individual to thrive. And really, when you look at Western civilization, there has been no greater civilization, because we built such a high trust, high IQ society that our people thrived, and these great individuals that we talk of achieved things that inspired the whole world. But when envious eyes looked at those achievements, and wanted to seize them for themselves. It was the community. It was the group. It was the wider society that came together as a shield wall to protect those great wonders. And the fact is that the individual and the group should work together. That's what productive enterprise is all about. In my book, I talk about the difference between capitalism, communism, and how neither work for us, how, in fact, we need productive enterprise. And productive enterprise is like a pyramid. It's like a hierarchy, but it's not like a hierarchy where those at the bottom serve those at the top. It's a hierarchy where those at the top do wonderful things to inspire those at the bottom and make their lives better. But those at the bottom work hard to bring those dreams and ideals and ideas that have been sort of planned or designed by those at the top into fruition. So everyone works together. So those at the top are pulling up those at the bottom as those at the bottom are pushing up those at the top. And the entire hierarchy advances as one. And that is how individuals exist within a cohesive ethno-state. And that is how individuals and a group coexist, work together, and enshrine each other's future.
Yeah, indeed. What I would say about this, because I think that nowadays we are encouraged to think of ourselves as individuals. We're encouraged to think, well, I am, this all might be true, but it doesn't quite apply to me because I'm unique. I'm an individual. And it's true. I mean, it's true that everything, you know, everyone is a unique individual. Let's just acknowledge that. It's simply obviously true. But I think a better way to, you see, the trouble is that that can clearly alienate you and it can make you think that you don't have a duty that you do have. And I think it is important that, yes, celebrate your individuality, but understand that your duty, well, at least one of your duties, is to use your individual nature and character and talents and qualities, whatever, to protect your people, your folk. That is something that, and it is, in other words, you have to serve them in the way that only you can. And I think you should take pride in that rather than in being morbidly isolated from them.
Well, the important thing about individualism is I talked earlier about great individuals, people whose ideas or great works of art or, you know, architectural masterpieces shaped the Western world and inspire generations today. Well, their individualism, their individual greatness was something that was actually for the good of the group, for the survival of the group. And you see great individuals on the battlefield, people who gave it all, who made great sacrifices for the good of the group. I mean, think of Horatio Nelson. I mean, he died at the Battle of Trafalgar. He gave it all in one great military spectacle. But he gave it all and is remembered as a great individual. But he gave it all for the good of the group. Now, what we're seeing today isn't that kind of individualism. We're not seeing wonderful individualism that inspires, that uplifts, that sets a new precedent of greatness in the West. We're seeing what I often term as selfish individualism. And
yeah, I was just saying that, like, good individualism is about sacrifice. Like,
yeah,
that's really what
selfish.
It comes to.
Selfish individualism is something very different. And most of the individualism today is driven by a bizarre, sort of very childish sense of look at me. Now, when you see a child in the supermarket tantruming, beating his hands on the floor and screaming, that's his way of saying, everybody, look at me, I want attention. And if you're brought up well, if your parents do a good job of bringing you up, you stop doing that. You don't seek attention in negative ways anymore. You seek attention in positive ways. So you do very good things and people go, wow, that's a beautiful painting. And that painting inspires people. That painting uplifts people. It brings people together who marvel at it. And it's a contribution to Western society, to your community, to, you know, the educational body you produce that painting in. If you did, you know, like if you produce something wonderful in the at school and they put it in the school art gallery, that's something that contributes to the well-being of everyone at the school. That is positive individualism, but it's individualism that actually helps reinforce the group. But today we have this selfish individualism, which can be seen very much like really regressed adults, adults acting like babies, adults holding, or, you know, having, you know, adult tantrums in order to essentially get attention, but not for positives, not for positive things, but negative things. You see people doing ridiculous things to their face and body. You see people committing horrific acts in public that they should be embarrassed of, but the media's got people thinking that those things are cool. I mean, look at girls on nights out now. They all wear wildly revealing outfits. They all dance in very provocative ways. And sure, they're all individuals and they're all shouting, look at me. But the kind of individualism that they're pursuing isn't good for them. It's not good for Western society. And it will probably bring them quite a bit of trouble. And of course, all of this is fed by the media, which promotes selfish individualism. It promotes hedonism. It promotes materialism. And all of these things are really quite soulless. And the problem with them is when you pursue selfish individualism, you don't get the same kind of fulfillment as you do if you do something good for society. If you do something good and you get positive reinforcement, genuinely positive reinforcement, you feel good because you've helped your community. But if all you're doing is satisfying that little buzz every time you need a buzz, and you're doing it through this kind of selfish individualism, it leads you down a slippery slope. And I've seen that in many ways. You know, people pursue a path of hedonism and they become these selfish individuals that just live for themselves, live for the next buzz, live for the next high. And it leads them down a very dark and ultimately unfulfilling path. And sometimes a very shortened path, it can lead to their death. And this is the big difference. The individualism that people are engaging in today is not good for our people. It isn't good for them as individuals. And it's actually a plot by our enemies to destroy us. And all we're going to end up as is atomized, almost like drug addicts. And whatever your drug is, whether it's heroin, whether it's cigarettes, whether it's sexual hedonism, whether it's materialism, we're all seeking these things that ultimately aren't spiritually nourishing. So we're never truly fulfilled. Whereas if people were doing actual gainful activities, then their individualism may well be praised because it would actually help others, which would fulfill them in a way which wouldn't leave them feeling so empty, wouldn't leave them pursuing more, which is what they're always left with. They're always left with a hole at the center of their soul because the things they're doing are actually the wrong things. But those who told them to do it know they're the wrong things. And the problem is we've had all these horrible, soulless, evil role models foisted upon us that have told a generation of Western youth that doing the wrong thing is in fact the right thing. And that's a huge problem. And again, it takes us back to where we started, that that is why we in the alt-right need to become positive role models and lead our young people to a better lifestyle.
I think that man is built to sacrifice. And if he doesn't do that, then he feels bad about himself. And this is because he knows he's not giving. He's not making something of himself. And yet that is the message that a lot of popular culture sends, that it's all about you. But that means that you deserve things, are entitled to things and so on. Well, that breeds a childish mindset. And then again, I think you see that with the individualists. I think it is a danger that attends the various creeds that we're seeing nowadays, Jordan Peterson and so on. Because ultimately, I don't think it actually does make people feel better. I don't think it gives them a sense of fulfillment. It doesn't make them fulfilled. It makes them selfish, as you say. And it keeps them stifled in an adolescent mind, sort of way of being. I think that basically, if you're not sacrificing, and I don't mean suffering all the time, but I mean sacrifice, if you're not actually giving of yourself, then basically you are a loser. and you will feel like a loser. I think that's just part of it. It's part of the nature. I think it's just inherent in the way that we are. So, and it, again, I think that a lot of popular culture today gives you the opposite message. And I think that this leads people in all sorts of destructive directions. So, yeah, I think we're in agreement, but we're articulating it in different ways. That I hope that's useful for people. Okay, well, excellent. Let's cap it off there, because I think that's been good and concise. So, okay, Mark, you're doing these fitness things. You're going to be doing them every few months. Well, you are doing them already every few months. That's going to continue next year. I think that people should get involved. I want to see it grow. I was very excited about it at the time, actually. I remember saying to you, I hope this develops and expands. And yeah, great. Fantastic. So is there anything else you'd like to say before we end?
No, I'd just like to thank you for having me on, and I'd like to thank the audience. It's great to see so many people here tonight, and I hope you all have a great Christmas, and I hope I can see you all, especially you, Millennial Woes, in the new year. I hope we can bring some great change in 2019, and I hope these revolutionary winds that are sweeping all across Europe will continue to blow, and that we can make a real change for ourselves, for our nation, and for our people. Because I know that when we stand together, when we build that shield wall, we can secure a future for our people. So thank you for having me on, and I wish you guys a very, very happy Christmas.
Okay, that was, I'll put my camera back on. Okay, that was Mark Collett. Thank you for appearing, Mark. It's been very good having you on this year. And thank you to everyone for watching. I'll see you soon in about an hour with a very different guest, Count Dankula. We'll see how that goes. In the meantime, thank you, Mark Collett, and see you later.